Welcome to another Carlin Live Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now we're going to, dare we say, a special guest?
I think extra special guest.
Extra special.
And this guy here is like, his pedigree, athletic pedigree is world class.
Now we have had him on a split show. We had four guests.
We spoke to him just recently, but in that role as a coach.
Yes.
But we want to talk to him about, of course, his days as an athlete.
Malcolm Bennett. Welcome to the show, Malcolm.
Thank you for having me again.
It's our pleasure. Now, Sean, I believe when Malcolm first started athletics, there was someone he knew who was the first person.
I don't think he knew him at the time.
No, who was it?
Well, Malcolm says it was me. Now, you tell the story, Malcolm, because my memory is a bit, I'm old now, I forget things.
Well, basically, the very first time I ever competed in a legitimate race that was outside of school, was in the old Kensington sports field. And anyway, so I would go up and...
So how old were you then?
I would have been 18. 18, I reckon. And Paralympian Neil Fuller, who sort of got me into running, he takes me up and introduces me to Sean, and she shakes my hand and that. And I mentioned it to him, probably 4 or 5 years ago, and now doesn't remember it. So I obviously left a good impression.
At the time, I was pleasant, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Like I spent time and thought.
What happened since?
Did I say anything? Was I motivational? Did I say something that inspired you to go on to be the great athlete you became?
Not really. But you did have a nice head of hair, though.
So just my presence was enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, he had a lovely head of hair, though, also.
But I didn't like fob you off or anything, did I?
You didn't answer my question.
What? Did you even, what question? Was it a question or a statement?
You were saying you were quite pleasant. What happened?
Well, life, basically. Well, I mean, you get grumpier as you get older, don't you?
Oh, I wouldn't know.
Well, I think in some ways I'm more tolerant, in other ways I'm less. So it's just the way it is. But anyway, when people ask me dumb questions, I'm less tolerant.
So tell us a little bit about, your sporting career, sort of in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, it was literally a 5-minute decision that I made that changed my life. I'd gone back to high school to do year 13, and we had the end of year graduation, and I wasn't going to go because most of my friends had graduated the year before, and I'm like, I don't really want to go. Anyway, I literally got talked into going at the last minute, and I went up there, got my certificate. I can't even remember what that was for. And then at the end of it, Neil Fuller came along and talked to me, and I think the link sort of gave away that I had something.
Was Neil, did he present there?
Yeah, he was our guest speaker. And he came and spoke to me and said, hey, did I play sport, able-bodied sport? And yeah, I said I'd played football, I'd played rugby, I'd played cricket, and, I sort of ran on SportSafe. And he said, had I ever thought about representing my country? And I'm like, no. And basically from there, I competed in my first nationals probably 5 months later, won 4 gold medals. I even won a gold medal in the jab that time.
Wow.
People
don't know about your throwing expertise, do they?
No,
but we'll get into that.
It's not bad. And won 4 gold medals there, and sort of I was training probably once a week to start with. Went to then my second nationals, which was in Canberra in 98. I'd ran a world championship qualifier, and I think I'd ran probably my 10th national record by that point, between the 1500 and the 800, and made my first national team for the 98 world champs in Birmingham.
So you said before, that changed your life. Like, let's go back before that. So growing up as a young kid with cerebral palsy, how was that? And in terms of then, were you always loving sport? Or or was it something you just did?
No, I always enjoyed sport. Growing up in the 80s and sort of early, mid-90s with cerebral palsy wasn't always pleasant, I guess you would say. I mean, I was probably... In primary school and most of high school, I was the only kid in school with a physical disability, because a lot of people don't know that back then, people like me got pushed into the special schools. My mum was very adamant that I would go to what people called a normal school back then. It wasn't pleasant most of the time. I got picked on daily. I got beat up regularly. It's just the way people were back then. Because, people like me were better to be heard but not seen. And I don't like to admit it, but there were times when I had to fight back and I had to, I don't condone it, but I had to do it at the time. Otherwise, I was just going to be somebody's punching bag. But I always took whatever the discipline was from my reaction or my actions to stand up for myself so I didn't get beat up more and more. So if it meant that I got detentions or whatever, I would just wear the consequences.
Malcolm, did you have any older siblings that could look after you?
No, I've only got younger siblings. My middle brother, Graham, who graduated here in 2004, was and still is quite protective of me. And if someone was to say anything in front of him, he has a bit of a short fuse in that regard.
I had a brother 14 months younger than me that was afflicted with the same thing.
Yep.
But he always had me sort of looking after my older sister. So it must be hard being the oldest with that.
It is. And then you have, like, your younger brothers, because I have two younger brothers. One just turned 17. And there comes the point when you have to explain to them, you know, why do I walk different? Why can't I do stuff that they can do quite easily? So you always have to have, either myself or my dad always had to have that conversation. But they accept it fine. I mean, it's a lot better nowadays for anybody with a disability than it was back then. I mean, and then if you go back even further, so I was born in the late 70s. Had I been born 10 years earlier, I probably would have ended up in some sort of home.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people don't know that people with disabilities were taken from their homes and put into, like, institutions in, like, the late 60s and stuff.
Yeah, well, my brother was born in 1958, so I know what you're talking about.
And so we've come a long way, and I would think, do you think that sport as a vehicle has helped people with disabilities? Because, I mean, like, I know when I was a young athlete competing and training, and there were many athletes at Olympic sports that, as you talked about, in with all sorts of disabilities, wheelchairs, the whole lot, blind athletes, deaf athletes, etc. And Growing up, here's a whole bunch of athletes who are all out there training together. But I think, do you think sport has been a great medium and vehicle for people with a disability for the general public to go, you know what, there is no difference. It's just we all have our differences, and off we go. We all treat each other the same.
Absolutely. I mean, I look at when I started competing and doing well, people looked at me totally different.
Yeah.
The people, my close friends, didn't look at me any different now. But a lot of people did look at me different, as if to say, oh, you can do something, you are good at something.
So they probably saw you as an athlete. He's not a person with a disability, he's an athlete.
The better I got, the better my results got, people started to see me as more of an athlete first, and the disability came second.
One of the beauties of sport, of course, is that it can be a very social equaliser in that regard, and I tap my hat off to all the organisations that have made it possible for people with disabilities and people with blindness and people with all sorts of afflictions able to compete on an equal level with their peers and gain the respect they deserve.
It's great. I mean, like I said, it changed my life, because had that moment back in the late 90s never happened, I honestly don't know what I would be doing. I probably wouldn't be working here. I honestly didn't know what I was going to do with my life after school.
When you say working here, you're talking about Trinity College. Yeah. What do you do here at Trinity College?
I work in the sports department, and I'm the sports assistant, so I help out the heads of the sports, organising whatever they need done, pretty much. If they need something done in a hurry, they come and see me.
And also coaching.
And I coach too.
Well, I know coaching outside the college, but you're also coaching many athletes within the college. You're a big part of the athletics program.
Yeah, I've been here a long time now, 19 years this year.
I think that speaks a lot for equality in sport, because you're doing the same job as what an able person would do. So, you know, take my hat off to you. And I've seen you around the place for many, many years. I know I've done several stories on you going back in the day, and I've always looked at you as one of those people with Paul Benz and others who have just sort of like almost risen from the ashes to become a prominent person in the community. Well done.
That's great. I mean, like I said, you know, like, and I guess living in Gawler, I spent probably 10 plus years living in Gawler, so I'm sure there's lots of people that remember seeing me running around the streets and, you know,
Well, they do, and I know I consider you a local, like a local Gawler person. I know watching, I was just watching your 800 metres on the, from the Sydney Olympics, and they introduced you as from Gawler, which is a good thing.
It is. I mean, it was great. I mean, I would, you know, run in the neighbourhood. I remember when I got my letter for, I reckon it was the Greece Games, I was the postie's first stop. Like, he knew that I was going to be waiting for that letter on that day. And he was my first stop, and he knocked on my door, and he wouldn't leave until I opened it in front of him. So luckily it was good news, not bad news, because I wouldn't...
Well, that's a great story. Do you remember? Do you know the postie's name?
No, I can't remember. It's a long time.
My neighbour's a postie. He's been there for a long time. It might have been him. I'll ask him.
Yep. I was his first stop.
Oh, that's what community is all about, isn't it? So let's get back to then. You talked about your early days and Neil getting you involved, and off you went. But yeah, I mean, in the end, let's talk about your international career and your representation of Australia, and tell us about like your favourite competitions and what you remember from those days.
I mean, I look back and now I enjoyed all of them. I mean, I lost a few of them, but I look back now and I still enjoyed it. But I mean, I walked away with 2 World Championship bronze medals, 3 European Championship gold medals, a World Championship gold medal, numerous national medals, numerous national titles. For a period in my life, I was considered the best athlete in the world at what I did. I mean, I think back in 2003, I think I was ranked in the top 10 in every event that I had done in the previous 12 months.
Including
shot put and discus. And I was quite chuffed about that. I looked at that one day and I'm like, oh, really? So I was always disappointed that they never brought in something like the pentathlon for cerebral palsy, because I think I would have dominated that.
You would have.
Because I could run and throw.
Which is a rare skill.
Yeah.
Now, of all the events you've put in, is there a pet event that you've just sort of like loved competing in, and it means something special above the rest of them?
Probably the 800. I just wonder. I mean, I remember early on I struggled with it a lot, and my coach, Richard Burdenwell, I remember saying to him one day, I'm like, coach, I don't know what's going on here. I couldn't buy a fast on. And I just remember one day down the track, I'm like, I'm just going to go for it in the first lap. And if I die, I die, and we're going to see what happens. And I did that, and I ran really well. So that was my mindset in that race afterwards, was just to take it out hard and see how I went. And back then, I was competing with, well, I was in my 20s, but I was competing with a lot of the over 35 athletes, because we were around about the same speed. So I could get some proper racing sort of simulation experience sort of thing.
At Sydney, what was it like competing? Again, I said I watched that on YouTube. Now, they didn't show your semi-final, which you won convincingly. But the crowd, like the actual, when they announced you on the day, and you can see there was a lot of noise. So they really, I mean, what was that like?
It still gives me chills to think about it. I remember walking in the opening ceremony, because we were the last country in as the home country. And all I remember is looking up and just flashes. 110,000 people and just flashes going off everywhere. Who would have thought for a Paralympic Games you'd get 110,000 people at an opening ceremony?
That's fabulous, isn't it?
It was, and you'd never forget it. I mean, you just look everywhere and there's just people, just seas of people.
Now, you mentioned Richard Bednall before. How much of an influence did he have on your career?
Oh, he had a massive influence on not only my career, but me as a person. He was my coach for probably 8 years. And he was also my boss for a period of that time as well. So we saw each other literally every day. But he was always, and any of his athletes will say that, you know, he was always there for us. Whatever we needed was never too much dramas. But he always made sure that we were, helped us become better people. And I think anybody that's been around him becomes a better person for it. I mean, he was kind of like, because we saw so much of him, he was kind of like an extra father figure. So if you step too far out of line, he'd pull you back into line and things like that. But, yeah, I owe him a lot. I mean, I needed a coach. I didn't have a coach at the time because I'd split with my previous coach for reasons. And I needed – and this was literally, I don't know, 2 months out from the 12-month out trials. Probably not even that. It was closer. And all of a sudden I needed a coach, and my brother had just started school here in year 7. And he's the one that set it up for me.
Now, I've just got to ask you, you coach yourself now, what's the best advice that you know of to give a young up-and-coming athlete?
Enjoy all of it. Whether your career lasts for 5 years, 10 years, 2 years, enjoy all of it. Enjoy the training. Enjoy the competition. Because no matter how long you do it for, it's over in a heartbeat.
Malcolm, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. We can't fit your whole life story into our 15-minute podcast, but really appreciate your honesty and your story today. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Now, we hope to have you again sort of in the near future. So, into another Carlin Low Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
Sean Carlin.